Welcome to The Church Planter's Life, a podcast exploring the possibilities and pain of starting a missional incarnational church. This podcast is a resource of the V3 movement. V3 is a grassroots training organization for men and women planters around the country. Thanks for tuning in as our host Matt Alexander leads the conversation.
Welcome to the Planter's Life podcast. I'm Matt down in Miami, Florida, and I'm talking today with the Reverend Brandon Rencher out in Greensboro, North Carolina. And we're going to be talking about their journey of planting a missional incarnational expression of the church in Greensboro. Brandon, good to see you.
Good to see you, man. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about your context in Greensboro, the neighborhood you guys are in, and kind of how you got going.
Yeah, sure. Thanks. So I'm Brandon, and we're in Greensboro, North Carolina. Greensboro is the third largest city in North Carolina. Just a few more sort of features about Greensboro is that it is the first city in North Carolina that is majority. So we have a very large African-American and the language we often use is black and brown population, over half of the city. And then also it has a strong legacy of social justice and community transformation work. Most folks are probably familiar with Greensboro around the Greensboro Four and the sit-ins at the Woolworth counter here in Greensboro. That's a very prominent story during the civil rights movement. So a long legacy of racial and social justice, economic justice, that's faith rooted in the city, which is really beautiful. And it was really important for us as we got the Good Neighbor Movement started, which is the name of our church, the name of our community is the Good Neighbor Movement. And we are affiliated with the United Methodist Church, I'm United Methodist Provisional Elder. And it was important because we knew from the beginning, before we even had a name over 2 years ago, that we wanted to plant a missional incarnational expression of church that brought together social justice with contemplative spirituality and with liberation theology, like liberation theology praxis. So being with the people, suffering with the people. And so we knew we wanted to bring those three pieces together. And Greensboro is an ideal place to do that because of its unique history and legacy and culture. So we currently have two missional incarnational communities. We call them city villages, so I'll refer to them as city villages moving forward. Cool. We often say it takes a village to raise disciples, and that it's, you know, the village ethics of our indigenous heritages that really shaped our people back in the day to fight for liberation and healing, and to even be able to have the opportunity to talk to someone like you, Matt. You know, 60, 70 years ago, 100 years ago, I wouldn't be talking to you on this platform as a white brother. And so it's important that we build upon their heritage of building multiracial, anti-racist movements for liberation rooted in faith, rooted in the Jesus story. And so, so that's where the city village language comes from, is our commitment to village. And then we had to throw city on because clearly we're not in a rural context. So, we walk around telling folks village, that would have been weird. So, we have two of them. We have one in my neighborhood where I live.
Okay.
My wife and I, my wife, Erica, we have two sons, Philip and Morris, not named after the cigarette company, I promise. they are going on 6 and 3. And we live in a predominantly African-American community. It's part of what's often called East Greensboro, which is the black and brown side of town, poor side of town. There are white folks here too. And so we're in a neighborhood called Old Ashboro, named after the previous name of the street that's now MLK, Martin Luther King Boulevard. It used to be called Old Ashboro Street. And so we're part of the Old Ashboro neighborhood. And it's an underserved, working class, kind of working class up to kind of lower middle class neighborhood, mainly African-American, also Hispanic, Latino brothers and sisters and white folks too. And then we also have a city village in a neighborhood called College Hill. And that's the university part of town. Greensboro is a, education is a huge industry. I hate to talk about education as an industry, but it is. So we have, how many universities? We have A&T, Bennett College, we have Greensboro College, Guilford College, UNCG, Elon, Guilford Technical Community College. There's quite a few. And there's this one section of town that's kind of like the college part of town, and that's where we have another one of our city villages. And we meet in a coffee shop that's owned by an African-American woman, middle-aged African-American woman, who's also a member of the city village. And that area is very diverse economically, racially, and it's just a neat area. And it's kind of surrounded by a lot of, you know, what you typically find on kind of a college town, college street, college strip, where there's a lot of restaurants, a lot of pubs, mm-hmm. a lot of art places, a lot of third spaces there, and professional services offered. And then a lot of student housing, a lot of professors and professional class folks that live in the area. And then there's also a lot of poverty, a lot of homeless folks around too. So that's a little bit about who we are. And
Very cool. So, and how long have you guys been around so far? How long have you been?
Yeah, going on 2 years.
About 2 years, yeah.
Yeah.
Very cool. So, yeah. Sorry, go ahead. You're about to say something.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say, yeah, we had the way the United Methodist system is set up, our polity makes it such that it's a little tricky to talk about how old we are because the bishops appoint us. And so we get the conversation going pretty early on. So, you know, in terms of the full conversation, it's going on 3 years.
Okay. Very cool.
Yeah.
So I have some other questions, but I'm fascinated by, and would love for you to speak about how this kind of is fleshing out right now in the life of your community, this fusion between contemplative spirituality, mm-hmm. the social justice tradition of the Christian mm-hmm. faith, and liberation theology.
Yeah. So
how do those, that seems like a really, you know, unique combination of different streams that are trying to merge together. How does that play out? If I was to come and to hang out with you guys for a week, mm-hmm. immerse myself in the life of the community for a week, how would I experience those?
Yeah, that's a great question, Matt. You know, the truth is, in my experience with folks, is that folks typically are drawn to one of those.
Sure.
And we tend to use the language. We don't talk like that with our people. We don't say, you know, that we're blending those three things together, those three traditions together. Eventually, as we train up folks, we use that language. We use the language of our values, and they are belong, be still, become, and be bold. Mm. And if you can imagine, they kind of all fit within those three traditions really well. And so typically people tend to be drawn to one of those, occasionally maybe more than one. And we tend to meet people at their point of need in that way. And so I'll give you an example. You know, here in my neighborhood, we go out on, we do something called healing prayer walks. And so we go out, and, you know, it's pretty standard in terms of the format. It's pretty standard of a prayer walk. The difference is that because of our commitment, again, to liberation theology and to social justice, contemplative spirituality, the way in which we pray is meant to be much more about reciprocity rather than praying for. It's about mm-hmm. praying with. And so we have really tangible ways that intentional ways we try to do that. But on one of them, we've met several people along those healing prayer walks. And often if we interface people in that space, usually they're folks that are looking to belong, right? Because if you, not everybody's into kind of praying, you know, like out in public. And so, and you know, often, you know, when we have folks that aren't really wanting to do it on the spot, we just usually get the list, we just sort of write out their prayer requests, and we don't actually pray on the spot. But for the folks that are willing to pray on the spot, there's really a need there, really hunger there for community and for spiritual community in particular. And so often that's the entree in which we follow up with someone. I could think of one brother that got involved, that's exactly how we, you know, followed up with him, was around his prayers. His prayers were so raw and honest and true that it was clear that he was looking for a space to belong. And so we might consider that, something like, because again, around the liberation theology pieces, in particular, the practical aspect of liberation theology and the history of what, at least in the Latinx, the Latin American liberation theology tradition, is called the base community. And the base community is kind of the community of practice out of which you live out liberation theology. And it's really about being known and knowing other people in a kind of network of relationships. So that would be an example. But then we have other folks where we're out doing, say we're involved in some kind of social justice campaign. And we're meeting people all the time, when we're involved in those things, whether it's organizing a prayer vigil for a campaign where, somebody has been shot by the police, as an example, or if it is a planning meeting where we're bringing together a bunch of stakeholders that are interested in putting together a coalition. We're meeting folks all the time. And in that context, we know that the entree is social justice, because that's why they're there. Mm. And so as we begin to explore, we may discover that maybe that person is interested in maybe connecting faith with their commitment to social justice. Maybe they haven't done that, or they've not been exposed to it before, or maybe they've been longing for it. And then we might introduce them to something like liberation theology, for example. Or maybe it's more of a practice that they want. And so we might introduce them to some of our contemplative practices. Like, one of the contemplative practices that we engage in pretty regularly is something that we, Lectio Liberatio. It's like a mix of Lectio Divina with liberation theology. And so rather than the four movements primarily being focused on, a sort of, how do I say this, a kind of standard, kind of orthodox approach to the questions as you engage the scripture, we do that. And in addition to that, we look at it through a hermeneutic of suspicion, which is the inheritance that we get from the liberation theology tradition to say, what are the power dynamics here? Where is God seeking to bring healing and liberation? And so so those are the kinds of things. And you just never know where people are wanting to really really have an entree into a community like this. So we tend to connect mainly with folks at the intersection of those three things. They tend to be folks who, are already involved, or whether that involvement is mainly social media or the involvement is on the ground, kind of social justice stuff or community engagement. They may not use the language of social justice. They may just be involved in their community, maybe don't have a social justice framework yet. We tend to be engaged with those folks, which is really, really neat.
Yeah. Very cool. Very cool. Mm-hmm. So, okay. So you have two missional communities that are happening right now. So tell us a little bit about, paint a picture of some of the kind of the basic, elements or rhythms of those, communities. How do they come together? How do they, how do they function? And specifically, like, talk about what does discipleship look like in the context of one or both of those missional communities?
Cool. Yeah. I appreciate you asking that. We try to, be simple and sticky, going off of the V3 language there. So we base our rhythm, our ruling rhythm of life, on those four values that I just shared: belong, be still, become, and be bold. We call it a covenant.
Yeah.
And so usually there's up under each of those four values or practices, we have one or two pieces or commitments that folks make, and that's unique to each city village. Because of the particular neighborhood. So, for example, and for us, living out all four of those is what it means to be a disciple. That's what it means to be being a disciple in the way of Jesus, is to live out what it means to belong, to be still, to become, and be bold. And so, for example, in the city village in my neighborhood, belong looks like a weekly meal together. It looks like accountability partners. And that emerged very organically, because that's, we're in a residential area. And so we have homes, and we don't want to reinvent the wheel. So we already eat meals every night. And so we share life in the context of a dinner, and that doesn't always include people that live in our neighborhood, but mostly people who live in our neighborhood. So, whereas in the City Village in College Hill, belong doesn't include food at all. It is much more of a kind of circle dynamic. Like, we sit in a circle on couches. We call this coffee shop the living room of College Hill, because it just has a living room feel to it, where you can just kind of just the way that the owner and artist designed it, you just feel comfortable, and it feels like sanctuary. And so we sit in a circle, and so belong looks more like just kind of circle time, you know. Yeah. In that City Village, another example would be like Become and Be Bold, which are kind of like the community engagement arms of our discipleship. Become much more like the hospitality piece, the solidarity piece, and being bold is much more about resistance, and it's much more about innovation. And so in the City Village in my neighborhood, that looks like this weekend we went door to door asking people about their wishes for our new sheriff, because this past week, or you may have seen in the news, just this month, there's been, I think, over 200 families that have been detained, or people who, immigrants who have been detained by ICE, that have stripped families apart, and a lot of them come from Greensboro. And so a lot of people don't know that the sheriff has the power to really put a stop to that. And so we went door to door asking folks about their wishes for our new district attorney, who happens to be the first Black district attorney in our city. And so there's a lot of leverage there to be able to really talk about solidarity. So that's what, you know, being bold looks like in my City Village, in my neighborhood.
Okay.
In the City Village in College Hill, that looks like there's really, we're revamping, recalibrating our community engagement in that City Village. But what has been expressed through our meetings here at the beginning of the year is to host just kind of low risk, safe, fun space for queer and trans people of color who often don't have a space in that community because of the kind of economic access that you have in order to be involved in the life of or the lifestyle of College Hill. Yeah. And so so they're planning a bunch of events for the year that are just kind of low profile, and it's, you know, just come and just let's just be together and hang. And, you know, I think some, it probably will have something to do with the arts and music and that sort of thing. So that's what it looks like for them to be bold and become in that neighborhood. And all of these, again, as we hold them together in the context of our City Village, of our shared life together, of our missional incarnational community, is what it means for us to be on mission, to be discipled by Jesus, to disciple one another. And you know, in different seasons, we're stronger in one or more. In other seasons, we're weaker in one or more. So,
yeah. Cool, man. So you've been at it for roughly 2 years, kind of on the ground, been dreaming, praying about this for going on 3 years now.
Yeah.
So what would you say, when you think about a significant joy that's come to you that you've experienced in this journey so far, and a significant pain or a significant struggle, you know, what comes to your mind when you think about these two things, and how do you hold both, right? Because this seems to be a common human experience in general, both the highs and the lows, but very much kind of in the journey of church planting, particularly in a more of a you know, kind of grassroots, vulnerable type of posture.
Yeah,
you're really gonna probably experience both in a pretty acute type of way. So share a story of both, and would love to hear any thoughts you have about that.
Yeah, thanks. Those are great questions. I think let me start with joy. Let me start with me smiling a lot. And I'll share the first one that comes to mind has to do with a brother who we met on one of our healing prayer walks, and was really grappling with some substance abuse challenges and just family challenges, had gotten out of the criminal justice system maybe just within less than a year of when we connected with him, and we just kind of kept connecting, and just inviting him out. He started bringing his nieces and nephews and family, his whole household out to our community garden that we have here in the neighborhood, and just began to meet up one-on-one with different folks in the City Village. And eventually we invited him to really take membership in the City Village, which for us, what that means is that you commit to the covenant of the City Village. And so that happened this past fall. And he recently got a job that has him working crazy hours. And so he's not been as, his attendance has been less consistent over the last month or so. But we were able to have a retreat in January with the City Village, and he came to half of it. And we asked the question of the group, what is your why? Like, why get involved with this? Like, none of us were looking for this necessarily. This is quirky and peculiar, you know? Why are you involved? What kind of impact has this community had on you? And what kind of impact do you want to have on the community and wider neighborhood? And this brother shared that for most of his life, he has felt alone. And though he's always had people around him, he's lived a real street life and just trying to make it. And though he'd have people around, they weren't always necessarily having his back. So he felt like he was often out ahead of everyone on his own, or he was behind on his own. And so he felt like when he made decisions for his life, he was doing it for himself. And that also felt very isolating. He said that his experience with the Good Neighbor Movement in the City Village is that before he makes decisions, he thinks about us. Wow. And that's profound, man. Like, that brings me such joy, because that's not something you can force on somebody. That's something that comes very organically and naturally from somebody's own longing and their own sense of connection. And especially somebody that's, you know, from the hood and from the streets, like, to be thinking about your church as you make decisions, as you move about your day, and especially because he's still trapped in so many of the oppressive systems that keep him down. Yeah, he didn't have to do that. He could absolutely turn to, another way, maybe, you know, mammon or whatever else, but he's thinking about his church. And you know, one example he shared was that, you know, he had gotten into a conflict with somebody on the streets, and he was like, rather than get into a fight, I was like, man, what would my community, what would they say about me? You know, like, if I did this. Wow. And so he chose the way of peace instead. That's beautiful, man. Like, that brings me some joy. So, and then I think to myself personally, I think, you know, I came into this church plant, having planted prior to this in a rural community, and doing missional incarnational community, but one of them, and rather than trying to multiply several of them, and I did it in the context of a traditional church too. So I had an established congregation that I was growing, and then also experimenting with a missional incarnational community, and I experienced a lot of pain there, my family and I, and. And so for me, what brings me a lot of joy these days is that I feel like I have folks that have my back. Mm. And that's really important to me, because because this is a church rooted in the tradition of social struggle, spiritually based social struggle. It's just hard. It's hard work. And it's you take 5 steps forward and you get a victory around some issue or some campaign or some policy. And then you get a blow and it knocks you 10 steps back. Your name gets slandered in the press or whatever, you know, and to know that you have people that have your back, and that it's not just in words, but it's in action. Mm. And that brings me so much joy. And for me, it's not primarily about having 1,000 people. It's about having 10 maybe solid people, right, that like really have my back. And that's discipleship. That's what Jesus was dealing with. And it takes time to do that. And so I'm grateful that we've chosen to take time with folks, because we need that time for ourselves, myself and my family. And so, and folks have given us their time to care for us. So that brings me a lot of joy, man. Yeah. In terms of pain, you know, right now we're in a season where there's a lot of, there's just a lot of challenges boiling up in the community. I think that for folks who are used to, we generally, you know, just have to kind of kind of moniker or generic way to describe the people we connect with, they tend to be folks who feel like their backs are against the wall. Or it's folks who maybe are more privileged, but they have chosen to be in solidarity with those people. So they feel like their backs are against the wall in a different kind of way, perhaps with their family of origin or with their neighborhoods of origin or their churches of origin. Yeah. So folks that just constantly feel like we're struggling, you know, like we're fighting. And what that means is that in some ways, being exposed to a community that is actually showing up for each other sometimes can be the most, it's the thing that you know is the most healing for you, and at the same time it's scary as hell. Mm. You know? And so what that means is that when challenges come up in people's, for example, in their relationships, for example, or if there's, whether it's within folks within the city village, or if it's, you know, maybe a family member, et cetera, the vulnerability it takes to share that. Even though you know time and time again that we've shown up for each other, I feel pain. I am empathetic with the conditions that have shriveled our hearts in such a way that we, even when we've been proved otherwise, that this community is reliable and shows up for each other, that it's so easy to return back to the shriveled heart.
Yeah.
And I lament the fact that we've experienced so much harm and abuse that can tend to be our default mode. But we don't stay there, which I'm happy about, right? It shows examples of joy, but I lament that, man.
Yeah.
Which to me shows the need for a community like this even more. Wait a second, Philip. A community like this even more because of our need to continuously be bandaging the wounds of one another and really trying to get to the root and bring healing. So, yeah.
That's good stuff. Thanks for sharing, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, I'm going to kind of wrap up our time together. But if people want to connect more with you and the Good Neighbor movement, what you guys are up to, how could they find you online? How could they stay connected with what you're up to?
Yeah. Check out our website, goodneighbormovement.org. You can sign up to receive ongoing updates and that sort of thing, newsletter, et cetera. Watch our blog. We try to blog as much as we can when we have the time to share stories about what's going on in the community. So that's another way. Also on Facebook, we have a Facebook page and we have Instagram. So you can look us up there, Good Neighbor Movement, to follow what we're up to. And that's probably the best way. And then, you know, if you're interested in keeping up with the local news outlets here in Greensboro, you know, you'll probably see one or more of us involved in local social justice issues, trying to do good in our neighborhood. So, yeah.
Cool. Very cool. Thanks again for joining us and chopping it up for a little bit, dude.
Thanks, Matt. I appreciate y'all. Yeah.
We hope you discovered something meaningful in this podcast for your church planting journey. To connect with our training, tribe, and tools, go to thev3movement.org.